house mortgage 10 years ago with the lump sum option. Mimi had been apoplectic. That was the height of the market. She'd worked as a real estate agent just long enough to speak with authority. Our net will be zero. It was odd how often Mimi complained about money. After everything I've done, sacrifices were recited. I missed Wallace's mock trial finals 2 years in a row, and Ginger tuned her out. She had many techniques for escaping uncomfortable conversations. Her current favorite was to picture the medicine cabinet in her school office, reviewing what supplies she did or did not need. While Mimi fumed about the injustices she'd endured, Ginger pictured the top shelf. Cold packs, hot packs, tongue depressors, gloves. She never thanked us for the TV. Gauze sponge, gauze pad, tweezers, tape. After Neil and I bought her the dishwasher, she told us, "No thanks, it's easier to wash everything by hand." As she walked out of the house she still thought of as Glory's, Ginger noticed how the late spring sun hit her father's stone wall like a spotlight. Forever half-finished, the wall finally fit in, a perfect companion to the hanging gutters, weedy garden, and crumbling front steps. The rusty mailbox door creaked as she scooped out the leavings, a crossword puzzle magazine, a padded envelope from a theatrical makeup supply house, a catalog with a brown paper cover that read, "Glory Tangle, we miss you, come back." Ginger got in her car and buckled the mail into the passenger seat so it wouldn't slide around. When she got home, the flashing light on her kitchen phone caught her attention. Her first thought, always, was Julia. The usual rush of disappointment followed. Tracy, the cheerful social worker, was a fast talker on the phone, so Ginger had to play the message back twice to understand what she said. "I'm sorry for your loss. I'll call your sisters now." "Sister," Ginger said to no one, and then sat alone, digesting the news that Glory Tangle was finally gone. Chapter 17.
"How come we didn't go home with Daddy?" Mimi wanted to know.
Ginger kicked her sister's ankle. Couldn't she see that the night had not gone well? The evidence was right there on their parents' bed, the comforter twisted like a rope, their mother's pillow crushed flat as a pancake, while their father's sat like a puffy marshmallow, proof his head had been banished to the living room couch early on. Glory acted as if she hadn't heard a thing. Her headache gone, she was on a cheery mission to get them to the beach fast. This meant finding Ginger a bathing suit that fit.
"Which one?"
She held up a black plunging one-piece and a mustard-colored two-piece with a skirt. Since neither was not a choice, Ginger chose the black one. As soon as she put it on, she saw it came with its own pointy breasts that didn't need her to stay erect. The rest of the suit hung slack on her slim frame. She came to show her mother it didn't fit. But after a quick once-over, Glory announced,
"Perfect!"
As if the suit had an opinion of its own. The straps dropped off Ginger's narrow shoulders, and the top collapsed to her waist. Glory took a second look.
"That's nothing. Needs a little adjustment is all."
This time it took 5 safety pins to do the job.
"No muss, no fuss. Fits like a glove."
She turned her back, and Mimi poked the pointy breasts so that they went concave. Like a bird of prey, was it possible she did have eyes in the back of her head? Glory swooped in and dragged Mimi outside. There was the sound of a slap, and then Glory called through the screen,
"Show's over. Time to go."
In the car, Mimi's eyes were saucers of rage. But Glory, driving fast as if they were late, made brisk work of Ginger's concern.
"Barely touched her. Don't be fooled. She's tough as nails."
When they got to the sandal spot at Jungle Beach, Glory breezed by as Mimi listed what everyone could see for themselves. "Huaraches, earth shoes, green thongs, that's it."
The chalkboard warned of high winds. A yellow flag snapped in the stiff breeze. They passed the leavings of the previous night's festivities. A shallow depression in the sand held the charred remains of driftwood. Discarded oyster shells sat in a heap. An abandoned sari was wrapped around the wood slats of a broken lobster trap.
"Looks like there was a party," Mimi observed. "Where is everyone?"
"Sleeping in, Columbo."
Glory jammed the flimsy umbrella into the sand, the heavy wooden one having disappeared along with their father.
"What do you think people do after a party?"
She unfolded her chair, sat down, reapplied her pale lipstick, and used her pinky to fix a smudge no one else could see. With her mouth set into a soft smile, she opened a crossword puzzle magazine but didn't lift up her pen. The pages of the puzzle book fluttered in the wind. The umbrella jiggled like jello.
"Look," Charlie called. "Someone worked on my hole for me."
With his broken arm held close by the cast and his good arm overhead, Charlie jumped in.
"I'm sitting in the hole," he called out a moment later. "Can you see me?"
Ginger turned and looked.
"No, you're invisible."
He stood up.
"Come in. There's plenty of room. Callie, jump. I'll catch you."
Mimi jumped in after Callie.
"Hey, Gingy," she called. "Am I invisible?"
"Yep."
Ginger came to the edge of the hole and looked in. The hole was deeper now, and wider, too. It looked like a small excavation site, with sand piled up around the edges to make a low wall.
"Come in," Mimi said. "Jump.
Mr. Diggins will never find us here." That was all it took for Ginger to join them. But when she got in the hole, she found that even though it was wide enough for her to lie down in, sitting, her head poked out as if she were an oversized Alice in Wonderland. Mimi broke the news.
"You have to go. He'll see us if you stay."
"Don't worry," Charlie told Ginger. "I'm not done digging yet."
Ginger scrambled out, causing a minor avalanche, which Charlie applauded.
"You made it wider. You made steps."
Then he went to work, making the hole deeper so that when Ginger came back in, she'd be invisible too. Mimi climbed out to check on her rock tower to the moon, and Callie followed. But the tower had suffered the opposite fate of the hole. Toppled. Only a few rocks remained.
"Did it fall down?" Callie asked. "Or did someone kick it over?"
Mimi shrugged.
"Have to rebuild, that's all. Have to make it twice as high. Want to come with me? We need rocks with flat bottoms."
She skipped to the shore to begin her search without waiting for an answer. Callie turned to Ginger.
"I don't want to go with her. I want to go with you. To the cut."
"We can't."
"Why won't you take me?"
Her pleading got louder.
"Please? Pretty please?"
Even from a distance, Ginger could see her mother's posture take on an angle of irritation.
"Please, please, please,"
Callie begged.
"Stop it," Ginger hissed. "Let's go help Mimi."
While Charlie stayed behind to dig, Ginger stood guard at the shoreline, periodically cautioning her sister to stay out of the water. Everything was under control until Callie started screaming.
"Monsters! Monsters are coming!"
Callie pointed, screamed again, and ran to the blanket. Ginger ran after her. As she ran, she saw the beach people had arrived. Mr. Diggins was now sitting next to Glory. Thomas was playing Ringo Levio with his friends. But even the boy calling out, "Ollie Ollie Oxen Free," stopped at the sound of Callie's screaming. Everyone's gaze, Ginger's included, went toward the group of people running from the cliffs, people naked and covered in mud. The monsters. Callie let out one last terrified scream and burrowed her head into her mother's chest. By the time Ginger got to the blanket, Mr. Diggins was laughing. He kneeled beside Callie.
"Take another look. Those aren't monsters. Those are our friends. There's my sister, Minty, and her husband, Bob. Remember Bob? They took clay baths, that's all. With clay from the cliffs. Bravo! He applauded the clay people.
Her mother gave Callie a little shove. Go on, take a look.
Callie tentatively untwined herself.
See, are they monsters? No.
Getting clayed is fun, Mr. Diggins told Callie. It's like playing in the mud. Did you know grown-ups like to play in the mud?
No.
Callie inched closer to the people she now recognized as human.
It's like finger painting, he went on. I bet you like to finger paint.
Callie nodded and looked at her mother.
Can I go to the cliffs and get clayed?
Not alone, Glory said. Gingy, take your sister to the cliffs.
Ginger pretended she didn't hear her mother's instruction, because she did not want to go to the cliffs. She did not want to be in a crowd of naked, painted beach people, all of them laughing as if they were bewitched. She watched as the enchanted crowd ran into the water, holding hands in a wide circle. They let go to dive under, and then heads popped up, one and then another, out past the breakers like seals. Laughing, they played catch with clumps of seaweed, which they then used to sponge off the rust-colored clay that had dried hard on their skin. When they finished, they swarmed out. With the clay washed off, they no longer looked enchanted. They just looked naked. Ginger turned on her stomach and faced the other way. She'd never seen a naked man before. She'd never seen a man in pajamas, except in movies and on TV. Her father came down to breakfast fully dressed every day. The wind whipped up.
We should go, she called to her mother. It's too windy.
The umbrella pole jiggled.
The umbrella's going to fly away.
Have you ever seen such a worrywart?
Glory asked Mr. Diggins. His thigh had moved so that it was touching her mother's.
I think she's lovely.
Ginger waited for her mother to make a remark about his leg, or about whether she was lovely, but Glory's mouth remained a line flat as the sand. Giving up, Ginger rolled on her back and closed her eyes. A moment later the sky darkened, and she opened them. Mr. Diggins was towering over her. She sat up and averted her gaze to his feet. Impossibly, his toes seemed to have grown bigger. He had the feet of an ogre.
Raspberries?
He kneeled beside her and offered an open container.
Picked them this morning. I hear you love raspberries.
You're spoiling her,
Glory called over, and then,
Gingy, is he spoiling you?
Ginger stood up, taking her towel with her.
I don't want any, thank you.
Is she being rude?
Not at all.
Ginger peered into the container. The raspberries looked as if they'd been dumped in, the bottom ones crushed by the weight of the ones above.
She's crazy for raspberries, Glory said. The whole family is, right, Gingy?
We are,
Mimi answered, and inserted herself between Ginger and Mr. Diggins. Despite her size, with her hands on her hips, Mimi made a stalwart barricade. Mr. Diggins reached a long arm over Mimi's head and jiggled the container.
Go on. Take as many as you like.
The raspberries didn't move. To make him go away, Ginger picked one that still held its shape. But when she put it in her mouth, it was overripe, and she quickly swallowed it whole to be done with it. Mr. Diggins' wide forehead wrinkled.
That didn't look good.
She wanted to lie and say it was good, but she couldn't risk speaking because the berry was threatening to come back up.
Let me try one.
Mr. Diggins dipped a long finger into the container and scooped out a crimson gob, which he deposited in his mouth.
Ugh!
He wiped his lips on the back of his hand.
She's right. They're awful.
He wiped his hands on his trunks, leaving a streak of red.
Rotten raspberries was not my plan at all.
It's the thought, Glory said.
He extended his hand to Ginger.
Forgive me? His fingers glistened with spit. She looked to her mother for guidance, but Glory's expression remained inscrutable, so Ginger stretched out her hand and hoped that was right. She had no idea how long a handshake was supposed to last. It took two tugs to get her hand back.
Yoo-hoo!
Glory waved her crossword magazine in the air and brushed some invisible sand off her thighs.
Shall we finish?
Mr. Diggins returned to her as if nothing had happened. Nothing had happened.
We were here, Glory said. Four-letter word for shoe.
Clog, Ginger said quietly.
Beautiful and smart, Mr. Diggins observed.
Why don't you go for a swim? Glory called over, before it gets too windy.
It's already too windy, Ginger said. They're going to change the flag to red.
What are you, a psychic now? It's yellow. Everyone go with Gingy. She's in charge.
Charlie reminded her he couldn't go in because of his caste, so Glory let him stay and dig. Callie wanted someone to take her to the cliffs and to the cut. But Ginger talked her into staying near the blanket by telling her they needed a brave volunteer for a special mission. The job was standing guard in front of Mimi's rock tower to make sure no one knocked it over. Callie accepted the assignment and, like a little soldier, knees high in the air, marched back and forth, saluting people as they walked by. Ginger followed Mimi to the sea. Glory called after them,
"Don't go in far!"
The wind picked up as they walked. Hats flew off heads. Tuna fish sandwiches turned crunchy and were abandoned. Gulls swooped in, making a party of the remains. But Glory said the umbrella was not loose, and the ocean was not rough, and the flag would not switch to red. So maybe people weren't packing up to leave, and the sand wasn't getting in her teeth. Maybe your hair wasn't flying in all directions, and the sky wasn't blue, and the water wasn't wet, and her family wasn't falling apart. They sat at the water's edge, and Mimi said,
"Wouldn't it be funny if we got a jellyfish and threw it at Mr. Diggins, and it turned out he's allergic and he got stung and dropped dead?"
"Hysterical."
The blustery wind carried over the sound of a shriek. They turned and saw their mother chasing after the umbrella, Mr. Diggins right behind her. Glory ran the way she drove, her body moving forward while her head looked in the opposite direction. Both of them were laughing hard, oblivious to how the bobbing umbrella was threatening one family after another as it danced top over bottom along the beach, rising up over heads, touching down softly on sand, then up again to the next near catastrophe. The blustery breeze tossed Ginger's hair in a frenzy, blinding her. And then, as suddenly as it started, the wind dropped dead. She pushed her hair out of her eyes in time to see the umbrella fall like a missile, spear down, landing perfectly erect to her mother's delight. In the sudden calm, she could hear Glory's laugh, heartfelt and real, as she ran with Mr. Diggins to where the umbrella stood. They both flopped down beneath it. A moment later, they were up on their feet, and Glory was motioning to her daughters while calling out instructions.
"I think she's saying you have to keep an eye on Callie."
Mimi gave her mother a thumbs up, and they watched her disappear out of sight to the far side of the cliffs. Charlie was digging in his hole, and Ginger was playing spit with her sisters when Glory got back to the blanket. Mr. Diggins stood behind her, the umbrella perched over his shoulder, light as a twig. Her mother's smile looked dreamy, and Ginger noticed her legs had been clayed. Callie reached over and touched the red-brown streaks.
"You did it. You took a clay bath. Can I get clayed?"
She turned to her sisters.
"Please take a clay bath with me."
"No," Ginger said,
and Mimi quickly seconded.
"No way."
Callie experimented with defiance. Slowly, unsure how this would go, she took a step toward the cliffs. The family watched, amused. She was, after all, a little girl, the youngest of four, the one who made no demands. She continued, kicking sand and walking ever so slowly, until Glory called out to put an end to it.
"Callie, Claire, you are not going to the cliffs alone. Now come over here and sit down."
Callie obeyed half of what her mother said, the sitting down part.
"I'm going."
She scooted over an inch.
"I'm going to get Clade, and then I'm going to swim in the cut."
Glory laughed and turned to Mr. Diggins.
"She wouldn't dare."
Their heads tipped together as they went back to the puzzle. Ginger watched her youngest sister, who, like in a game of red light, green light, moved toward the cliffs every time her mother's eyes went to the puzzle, and then froze in place when her mother looked her way. Mimi broke the bad news.
"If she goes all the way to the cliffs, they're going to make one of us bring her back. And it won't be me. I'd rather drop dead than go there."
"Then tell Charlie," Ginger said.
"Tell him he has to take Callie to the cliffs right now."
"He won't. He'll say he's too busy digging."
Ginger disagreed.
"Tell him Callie will get in trouble if he doesn't. He hates when she gets in trouble."
"Okay." Mimi got up.
"I'll tell him he has to go or else."
Problem solved. Ginger lay down and closed her eyes. It seemed to take forever for Mimi to come back. When Ginger finally sat up to see if Charlie had agreed, Mimi was standing at the dunes doing nothing, and Callie was nowhere in sight. It really was exasperating having Mimi as a sister. Ginger called to her.
"Did he go?"
When Mimi didn't answer, she stood up and yelled,
"Did Charlie go?"
She walked over to where Mimi stood.
"Did Charlie go with Callie?"
Her tone called her mother's attention. Glory stormed over.
"What now?"
"Callie went to the cliffs, I think with Charlie, but maybe alone." Ginger looked at Mimi, but got no confirmation.
"What do you mean, you think?"
Glory asked. Mr. Diggins joined them and looked toward the sea.
"Would Callie go in the water without telling you?"
"She didn't go in the water," Ginger said. "Callie went to the cliffs to get Clade."
She turned to Mimi.
"Did Charlie go with Callie or not?"
Mimi didn't answer. When Ginger followed her sister's gaze, the tiny hairs on the back of her neck fluttered a warning. Her sister was staring at the sand where Charlie's hole was supposed to be, but impossibly, the hole was gone. It was as if the rules of the universe had shifted. How could a hole that big be gone?
"Where's Charlie's hole?"
Ginger slowly turned in a circle and then reversed direction.
"For the love of God," Glory said. "You're looking in the wrong place."
Disoriented, Ginger turned around again. But everywhere she looked, the sand was the same, flat and level as a pond. How could everywhere be the wrong place?
"You're not looking where you should,"
Glory insisted, panic growing in her voice. Mimi slipped her hand into Ginger's clenched fist.
"I saw the sand go in. I saw the hole fill up."
She paused, and the rest came in a whisper.
"Charlie's inside." "What?"
Glory sounded angry. But as she stared at the sand, she finally saw what Ginger saw. The sand was the same everywhere. Flat everywhere. Flat as ice. Her mouth gaped open, and then, as if in slow motion, Glory's piercing scream echoed down the beach, slicing through the sound of families arguing about who had the tanning oil and if there were enough grapes to go around. The scream was followed by silence. The next wave crashed, and pandemonium. Chapter 18. The first call Ginger made was to Richard. When he didn't pick up, she left a message. "Glory died. Can you call Nick's mom?" She felt a rush of adrenaline at the thought of Julia coming back, and then a flush of embarrassment. Her mother's death should not be reduced to a happy excuse for Julia's return. Besides, Julia had made her intentions clear. Ginger pictured her, Cheeks red, face hot, appalled that the conversation had taken a turn to contingency plans in case someone died. Then she pictured Richard brokering the awful compromise. If something happens, we'll let you know, but we won't expect you home. She crossed her hands, one atop the other, at the bottom of her neck, as if trying to shield herself from pain. Then she dropped both her arms. She'd know more later when she spoke to Richard. Now it was time to call Mimi. She tried her cell phone first, and when there was no answer, she called the house. Troy picked up.
I think she's in the attic. I think she's looking for old clothes to cut up for a quilt. I think my dad commissioned one for his waiting room. I think...
Ginger interrupted. Troy, sweetie, could you go find her and ask her to call me right away? After that, there was nothing to do but wait. To distract herself, she tried reviewing the contents of her supply cabinet. When that didn't work, she picked up a legal pad to make notes for her next danger class. The class was scheduled to be on the dangers of recess. But what she wrote down instead was the dangers of sand holes. She started to cross it out. This was a subject that Ginger, well raised in the art of deflection, had avoided discussing for years. But her pen stopped. Why hadn't she taught a class on this? She knew enough about them. She'd had a Google alert set up for sand holes for years. She kept close track of them, both where and how they happened, and of course, the aftermaths. Just this July, a 6-year-old boy died at a Massachusetts beach after digging a deep hole with a small plastic shovel. He was one of 4 sand hole collapse fatalities over the summer. They happened all around the country. In Oregon, the Bay Area, the Outer Banks, and at the Jersey Shore. They happened in England and Australia. She'd read all the articles and watched all the videos. The videos were strikingly similar. The brief shot of a school photo, the young smiling child, followed by a cell phone video of a doomed attempt at rescue. New England Journal, she wrote on her pad. She'd come upon the NEJM study several years ago. A decade of sandhole accident data. The youngest fatality, a 3-year-old boy. How had she never taught a class on this? Most parents had no idea a child happily digging one moment could be buried the next. And there were safety precautions, easy ones. Number 1, she wrote, check for holes on the beach. Number 2, see a hole, fill it in. Number 3, never let children dig higher than their knees. Her phone rang, and she put down her pen. Mimi's reaction was pretty much what Ginger expected. Acceptance followed by annoyance. Of course. It's Thursday. Of course she would pick a Thursday. Is this a bad day for Mom to die? Ginger thought. She didn't say it because she knew the answer would have been an unironic yes. Didn't everyone who knew Mimi know Thursdays were a nightmare for her? Thursday was Neil's late night. And despite a house filled with relatives, not one of them ever stepped up to offer help with the trifecta of getting Hunter to baseball, Troy to his math tutor, and Wallace to mock trial. Since Mimi liked to be in charge of important things, Ginger decided to relinquish control and let her sister pick the funeral home. Her hope was this would get her sister off the phone before she asked the question Ginger wanted to avoid. But it didn't work.
So, Gingy, how long do you want to wait to have this hullabaloo? We need to give people a chance to get here, right?
People? For a moment, Ginger let herself imagine Mimi was referring to a minion of Glory's old friends. Men in loose-hanging suits and women wearing peds and pumps. Rotary phone receivers pressed to their ears as they searched for something, anything, an eyebrow pencil would do, to scratch down the details of their friend's funeral. But of course, that wasn't it. Glory had shed her friends years ago. By people, Mimi meant Julia.
It's not a problem waiting, Mimi reassured her. Are you getting her a plane ticket, or are you going to drive there and pick her up? Is the boyfriend coming?
Ginger felt a surge of regret that she'd told Mimi anything about Nick.
Whatever, it's fine. We can wait. A few days, a week. It's not like Mom would care.
That part was true. The custom of quick burial would have held no meaning for Glory. Her religious practice consisted of two meals a year that were only vaguely related to Jewish holidays. In the spring, she'd make a Passover supper, usually held on Easter Sunday, with a token traditional offering to mark the occasion. Freshly grated horseradish, for example, but no gefilte fish. In December, she'd host a Hanukkah party, where she'd serve latkes cooked so briefly the centers would still be frozen, and if she remembered, applesauce from a giant jar, which, after dinner, would retire to its primary purpose of growing mold. Lighting candles was not part of the program.
Too dripsy. Neil's mother will have a conniption if we wait, Mimi was saying, but she doesn't get a vote.
She noticed Ginger's silence.
You can find Julia, right? She has a phone, doesn't she?
Ginger had thought about this. If it turned out Nick's mom didn't have current contact information, Ginger would find Julia herself. Portland wasn't that big. Surely street performers knew where each other lived. She checked her watch. If she left now and drove straight there, she could make it to Portland before dawn. She knew where to go, the neighborhood where buskers performed. She'd seen the streets in videos and surveyed the grid on Google Earth. She'd start when the sun came up, questioning fire eaters and fiddlers and runaways. She'd ask anyone she could find if they knew of a couple who wore Salvation Army uniforms and did something with a helmet and a sheet. She stopped herself. It was amazing, really, how quickly her daydream went from Richard calling Nick's mom to Ginger picturing her daughter beside her in the car, coming back home for the funeral and deciding to stay. But that would not happen. What would happen was that Richard would call Anne-Marie, and Anne-Marie would call Julia, and Julia would know her grandmother died. That was it. That would have to be enough. Of course, Mimi would find this impossible to understand. She hadn't been there when Julia left, so she never heard the steel in Julia's voice when she gave her ultimatum.
Trying to get Esty Popkin to back down is never easy, Mimi was saying, but I don't care. Waiting is the right thing to do.
Because life had been kinder to Mimi, she still had the luxury of believing there was a right thing to do.
Julia's not going to come for a funeral. We talked about it before she left. That doesn't mean anything. That was theoretical. Julia will change her mind the minute she hears the news. They were close, Julia and Glory. Don't you think she'll change her mind?
Of course, that was exactly what Ginger was hoping would happen. But feeding that hope would not make it true.
She's not coming back, she repeated.
And then a beep. Call waiting, interrupted.
It's Richard. I'll call you back.
Before Ginger filled Richard in on the details of Glory's demise, she wanted to know if he'd reached Nick's mom. He had.
Anne-Marie said she can get the message to them tonight.
Good.
And?
He paused a moment and then went on.
I asked Anne-Marie to make sure to tell Julia we're not expecting her to come home. We just wanted to be sure she knew what happened with Grandma Glory, and that we both love her, no matter what.
Ginger nodded.
Okay.
Her eyes were stinging. She wiped them with her sleeve.
Do you think Anne-Marie will say exactly that? Will she get it right?
She wrote it down, Richard told her. She read it back. She got it right.
When Ginger called Mimi back and told her she and Richard both agreed it made no sense to postpone the burial, her sister didn't argue. They divided up the remaining tasks. Mimi would find a funeral home. Ginger would go to the meadows to gather Glory's things.
Keep your eyes out for an address book, Mimi told her. I'll swing by the house after I'm done to check if there's one there, in case there's anyone else to call.
Ginger got off the phone fast, before Mimi could tell her which anyone that might be.
Chapter 19. The night of Charlie's accident, Ginger was struck by how part of what she remembered was hyper-clear, as if everything had occurred a fraction more slowly than normal. The sky was crayon blue, and the voices were sharp, and people lurched around in jolts and starts. Other parts, though, were a blur, as if she was experiencing and forgetting in the same moment. By the end of the day, this is what she could reconstruct. A man, long ponytail coming undone, ran from the far end with a metal spade. A woman, tie-dyed skirt, bandana around her head, loped behind him, shouting to the crowd that there were more, plenty more shovels and buckets by the clambake pit. An older man, no shirt, deep tan, scar down the middle of his chest, called for volunteers to help get the gear. And then Mr. Diggins, face going from chalk white to beet red, yelling over all of them, his voice piercing through the chatter, "Stop! Stop! Right now!" His tone turned threatening. "Hands only!" She could picture the exact moment he said that. How everyone froze, confused, until he said the next thing.
"Hands only until we know where the body is."
At which point, several people began to weep. Glory stood next to Ginger, leaning, listening, bare arm pressing into bare arm. And when Mr. Diggins said the word body, her mother wobbled and then grabbed Ginger's hand, holding on tight, as if otherwise she might collapse. Behind them, Ginger could hear the thrum of people talking, and when she turned, she saw them. A ragtag crowd who'd run over from the far end with whatever clothes they could grab. Some with nothing more than blankets loosely wrapped around their bodies. All of them watching her mother. Glory started shaking. Tiny shivers which seemed to pass right into Ginger's skin, so that within moments both of them were standing and trembling together. Ginger struggled and then finally got the words out.
"I'm sorry."
Though she still wasn't sure what had happened, she was sure it was all her fault. Glory's reply was so quiet, Ginger had to ask,
"What? What did you say?"
Mimi, standing on her mother's other side, translated.
"Someone needs to find Callie."
It was Thomas, standing next to Mimi, who volunteered to get her.
"Where is she?"
"At the far end," Ginger told him. "She went to get Clade. By yourself."
As soon as Thomas sprinted toward the cliffs, Glory's trembling stopped and her hand loosened its grip and fell, useless, to her side. From where they stood, Ginger could hear fragments, words lashing over her, voices rising and falling with the wind.
"Can't tell yet. Too risky. Careful now."
A lifeguard had arrived, but he was just a boy who stuttered as he radioed in the nightmare news. Sandhole collapse, to the person on the other end of his walkie-talkie.
"Hurry,"
the boy said, and then,
"Please."
Ginger saw his eyes fill, and imagined her mother chiding him to save his crying for when he was alone in his room with the door closed and the shades drawn. Her attention snapped back to the crowd, now arguing about where it would be best to dig and where exactly the hole had been. Again, Mimi spoke up.
"It was next to my tower," she pointed, "where that rock is over there."
A dozen people spread out around the one remaining rock of Mimi's toppled tower to the moon. They dropped to their knees, digging like dogs, some of them sobbing. In the distance, Ginger made out two figures running toward them, Thomas and beside him a young girl. Ginger called to her mother.
"Thomas has her!"
But her voice was drowned out by people shouting, "Stand back! Over here! Something moved!"
"Thomas has Callie!"
Ginger called louder, and she watched, stunned, as tears of relief streamed down her mother's face. And then a hand grabbed hers.
"Come with me!"
Ginger turned and saw Minty,
Her other hand was wrapped tight around Mimi's wrist. Ginger pulled her hand out of Minty's grasp.
I want to stay.
She watched as her mother pushed her way into the crowd.
Your mother wants you to come with me now. I want to wait for Callie.
Ginger didn't mean to be yelling, but she couldn't seem to get her voice to be normal.
Thomas is bringing her. I want to wait.
Her words were carried by the wind. Her mother heard and called back,
Go with Minty. Callie will stay with me. Why can't we stay with you?
Mimi asked. And then everyone, diggers and watchers, went silent.
Minty, take them,
Glory yelled, and Minty let out a soft cry and yanked them hard toward the path through bushes. This time, when Ginger wriggled free of Minty's grip, she got as far as the edge of the crowd. She struggled to see through the scrum. There was a smattering of applause, and the crowd shifted just enough so she could make out a glimpse. Disjointed images of Mr. Diggins' back and his arms. He was holding Charlie, crumpled and limp and impossibly small.
Move,
she told the people blocking her, and someone did. And then she saw it. Her brother waved.
We have to go now,
Minty said, and Ginger let herself be led away.
It's going to be fine,
Minty told them as they walked through the tunnel of bushes.
It's going to be fine,
she repeated as they got into her car. In the back of Minty's beat-up station wagon, Ginger and Mimi let themselves be lulled into a daze by the rhythm of the promise. It's going to be fine. They gazed out opposite windows. It's going to be fine. Their fingertips reached across the seat and touched. It's going to be fine. And Ginger repeated the words in her head, hoping that would help make them come true. Up in their room, Mimi asked Ginger if she thought Charlie was okay, and Ginger said yes.
Are you positive? Mimi pressed her. Or are you just saying that?
Positive, Ginger said, though she suspected Mimi could tell it was a lie. They tried to think of ways to make time go faster so that Charlie would be home soon. That he might not come home at all had not occurred to either of them. It was after dark when they heard the front door open, and voices whispering, and the door clacking closed. Mr. Diggins, his voice friendlier than normal, told someone,
That's not the sun, that's the moon.
And the person laughed. Callie. Ginger and Mimi raced down, and Mr. Diggins rose to his feet.
Whoa, hey-ho, sounds like the running of bulls here. Why aren't you two asleep?
What happened?
Ginger asked, and Callie shrugged her shoulders. She didn't know.
Upstairs, Mr. Diggins said. It's way past bedtime.
How come she gets to stay down?
Mimi wanted to know.
Callie's going to sleep here. He tapped the couch. She's frightened.
Of what?
Mimi could not imagine. Ginger felt herself shivering even though it wasn't cold.
Where's Mom? Where's Charlie? Did Charlie break his other arm?
Mimi wanted to know.
Did he break his leg? That's good, right, to break a leg?
This is nonsense,
Mr. Diggins barked, and Callie copied him, mimicking his gruff tone.
Nonsense, nonsense, nonsense.
Back upstairs,
Mr. Diggins shooed them.
Back to bed right now.
Mimi didn't want to sleep alone, so Ginger turned on her side and let her sister scoot into her bed. When Mimi started shooting questions, Ginger felt them like little darts in her back.
Do you think Charlie was scared when the hole caved in? Do you think his hair fell out? Do you think it went all white, like Cropsy?
Cropsy's not real.
Mom says he is. Mom says Cropsy has white hair and chops up children who are bad. Is Cropsy real?
Mimi called to Mr. Diggins, who yelled back,
Be quiet!
Ginger thought it made no sense for someone to yell, Be quiet, but she got quiet anyway, so she wouldn't have to answer any more of Mimi's questions. Soon the sweet scent of cherry tobacco drifted into the room. Mr. Diggins puff, puff, puffing on his pipe. Ginger turned to Mimi and saw the whites of her eyes wink on and off like lightning bugs. A tear leaked out, and then another, until there was a line of tears traveling like a tiny river along her sister's neat hairline.
"Why are you crying?" Ginger asked.
Mimi admitted.
"I don't know, but I'm allowed to cry here."
And they both turned as one to see if their window had shades. After a few moments, when the scent of cherry tobacco faded, Mr. Diggins' puffing had stopped. Mimi asked Ginger,
"Wouldn't Callie be less scared if she was sleeping with us?"
Ginger nodded and got out of bed. Together, they crept down the stairs. They found Mr. Diggins asleep, head tipped back on the chair, pipe resting on a small dish he'd placed atop Glory's puzzle, making a rack of the Taj Mahal. Callie lay on the couch, a blanket wrapped around her like a body bag. Ginger kneeled beside her and whispered in her ear,
"Callie, are you up?"
Callie sat up and waved.
"Up, up, up."
Mr. Diggins' eyes snapped open.
"What's going on here?"
"If she's scared, she should sleep with us," Mimi told him. "We're awake."
He checked his watch, a large, complicated thing with dials and cutouts of the moon, and let out a long sigh.
"I suppose that would be all right. I'm leaving early anyway, meeting the first ferry. But don't worry, you'll only be alone for a little while. I'm picking someone up to stay with you."
"Who?"
Mimi asked.
"Pooh-hoo,"
Callie echoed. Mr. Diggins winced and rubbed his eyes. Ginger took Callie's hand.
"We're going to bed."
And Mr. Diggins didn't stop them. It took some time to arrange themselves so that they all fit in one bed. But eventually they found a way that worked. Callie in the middle on her back, Mimi and Ginger facing her like a pair of parentheses. Callie fell asleep right away, but Mimi remained awake, pelting Ginger with more questions.
"Where's Mom? Where's Charlie? Who's coming? Where's Dad?"
"Dad will be here soon," Ginger said, which was wishful thinking. "And about everything else,
I have no idea,"
which was the truth.
Chapter 20 Ginger had been driving to the meadows to visit her mother every day for 6 months. But somehow this time she got lost, going south on the parkway when she should have been going north, and after that missing the turn for the jug handle. When she finally arrived, it took 3 tries before she got her car between the lines of the parking spot. And once inside the building, she waited at the elevator for a full minute before noticing the out-of-order sign. She took the stairs 2 at a time, and how could this be, got lost again? It was on her 2nd round circling the floor that she spotted Tracy, and it was only after Tracy stepped aside that she understood the reason she'd walked right past her mother's room. The nameplate on the door was now covered by a giant magnetic dove, someone's idea of closure. Inside the room, erasure had begun. The bed was freshly made with a silk rose placed on Glory's pillow. Was this still considered Glory's pillow? Was it okay for her to be in this room? Was it okay that Julia wasn't coming home? Ginger sat down on the bed. Why hadn't Richard thought to ask Anne-Marie to tell Julia that it's good to be with family when someone dies? That mourning can be complicated? That pretending a death didn't happen can have all kinds of repercussions?
"Stop," she told herself. "Don't think. Stay busy."
This was how she got through her day. This was how she got through her life. She did what was required. What was required here?
Stand up, open the closet, take out the clothes, put them in a bag. What did she require?
Don't think. That was key. In the closet, 6 velour tracksuits hung off kilter on metal hangers. Zipper jackets and elastic waist pants in a rainbow of nursing home colors. Coral next to lavender, lime green next to sky blue.
Such a soft blue, like a robin's egg, or the blue eyes of a newborn baby.
Don't think. Take the tracksuits off the hangers, place them in the bag.
There were clothes in the closet she'd never seen before. A red velour dress with a dozen looped buttons up the back. A denim jacket with peacocks embroidered on the sleeves.
Where would Glory have worn such things?
Were these her things? Or had the next person already moved in?
But no, there was her mother's red-ribbed robe puddled on the floor, as if Glory had melted away beneath it.
In one pocket of the robe she found a knot of tortoise-shell bobby pins. In the other, two hardened balls of used tissues. She tossed the remains in the tin wastebasket, where they fell with a thud. She surveyed the room. The drawers were jammed shut. The floor was streaked with water. A breeze from the open window blew a tumbleweed of white hair against her ankle. She hurried to the small bathroom, where the air held the sting of ammonia and the toiletries waited. Grabbing a tissue, she picked up a sliver of soap and a tall, sticky bottle of shampoo. She tossed things one by one. Thump, the gnarly tube of toothpaste. Womp, the sticky roll-on deodorant. Plunk, the crusty tub of hand cream. From the small glass shelf above the toilet, she scooped up a face puff, lipstick, blush. Brooke, the activity director, stopped by to offer a carton for personal effects. In went the framed photographs of Mimi's children, one stacked atop the other. It was in the final check of the room that she found the black marble composition notebook at the back of a bottom drawer. Written on the cover, in Glory's shaky hand, it said, "Notes to Self." Ginger cracked the book open, hoping for blank pages. But instead, there was her mother's careful script. Her aversion to reading her mother's musings had not mellowed. She closed the book and considered her choices. Journal in the box or journal in the trash? Dinah, the aide Glory said was mean, came in to offer condolences. Journal in the box.
"Sorry your mother passed," Dinah said as she offered a warm hug. "Thank you for being so kind to her."
As Dinah stepped away, Ginger noticed her calf.
"Your leg is swollen. Have you had that checked out?"
Dinah looked down. That's nothing. It's the phlebitis."
"Usually it's nothing," Ginger agreed. "But it can be serious. If it's deep in the vein, you never know. You could throw a clot. Have you talked to your doctor about it?"
"Well, not yet, but okay. Uh-huh, I will." Dinah hurried down the hall.
"Wait," Ginger called after her. "Sorry."
She didn't mean to drive Dinah away.
She didn't mean to drive anyone away. She just wanted to make sure Dinah had the right information.
Richard called her an alarmist. But Ginger couldn't understand why everyone wasn't alarmed all of the time. Her legs started trembling. What was that about? Could grief make her legs shake? Or was it possible she'd been so busy worrying about Julia and Glory that she'd neglected to notice something was wrong with her?
She quickly ran through a list of tremor diseases. Parkinson's, kidney disease, mercury poisoning. Could that be it? Could she have eaten too much tainted fish?
The problem was there were so many things that could happen, and no way to predict which would be the one that actually did. At the last faculty meeting, she heard about another parent falling ill. A gluten-free vegan mother this time. Lately, it seemed like that's how it always went. The moms who juiced and cycled from one city to the next to raise money for diseases, suddenly diagnosed with ALS.
If she got sick, would Julia come home then?
"Stop,"
she ordered herself. She pictured her medicine cabinet at work.
Lifesavers.
That's what she prescribed for children with clogged ears. Two yawns and a lifesaver.
Altoids.
Those were for the sad children, who came in complaining of vague miseries, but sometimes could be distracted by the sharp taste of a small mint. Her leg was definitely trembling now. Okay, it was probably something mundane. Hypoglycemia, say, or a thyroid condition, or stress. Stress could cause all kinds of peculiar symptoms. And well, Ginger had been under an elephant's load of stress for a very long time. What was strange, now that she thought of it, was that the quivering felt exquisitely specific. Her upper leg, her upper thigh, her right upper thigh. Why would stress only affect a person's right thigh? She concentrated on the sensation, just below the front pocket of her favorite pants. She pulled out her vibrating phone.
Mimi, thank God it's you. I thought I might have mercury poisoning.
What are you talking about? What took you so long to answer? Where are you? A simple task. That's what Mimi had to do. While Ginger was removing old tissues from the pockets of her dead mother's robe and throwing away Q-tips that still had her mother's earwax on them, Mimi had to make one phone call and go to an empty house to look for an address book, which, if it even existed, they didn't really need.
Ginger, Mimi snapped. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can't believe this. Hello?
I'm here, Ginger said.
But Mimi was gone, and when Ginger called back, she got voicemail. Hurrying across the Meadows parking lot, her foot came out of her clog and down she went, graceless as a goose. The box from Glory's room flew out of her arms, disgorging all manner of popkins onto the macadam. A man on his way to his car appeared out of the dusk.
You okay?
Yes, fine, sorry, thanks.
As he helped gather the broken frames, he pointed at her palm.
You're bleeding.
She looked.
Just a scrape.
She wiggled her fingers.
Everything works.
She started toward her car. The man touched her arm to stop her.
You forgot something. Over there.
She saw it immediately, peeking out from beneath her car. The marbled notebook, her mother's most recent journal. She thanked the man who couldn't possibly know there was nothing she'd rather have run over, nothing she wanted less to kneel down and retrieve than the most recent written record of her mother's thoughts. She tossed the journal on top of the broken frames, put the box in the trunk of her car, got in and checked the rearview mirror to see why her face hurt. She removed a small pebble stuck to her cheek and was blotting her bleeding palm with a tissue when her phone vibrated again. This time she answered it quickly.
What's going on?
Callie's here, Mimi hissed, and her phone went dead.
Ginger sat for a moment and went over the facts. Julia was gone. Glory was dead. Callie was back. She leaned forward and checked the inky skies for signs of bad weather, and then drove slowly through the moonless night toward the house she still thought of as her mother's. When she pulled off the highway, the car behind her honked, and she accelerated to the speed limit. The dashboard idiot light caught her eye, and she wondered,
how long had that been on?
Before she could process what the icon meant, the car began to slow. This time on its own. Another first. Ginger had run out of gas. Chapter 21 Morning sun streamed in through the porthole window, warming the back of Ginger's neck. She peeled away from the wall and assessed the situation. Alone in bed, sisters gone, left arm squashed beneath her, numb. With effort, she heaved herself up and her fingers tingled back to life. Her foot searched for the floor and instead found something bony. She peered over the side of the mattress. Her foot was on her sister's leg. Callie lay on the floor in a fetal position, half of her body under the bed, still asleep. The trail of Mimi's laughter rose from the kitchen along with the smell of pancakes. Ginger shook Callie's foot.
Get up!
She jiggled her leg.
They're home.
Another shake, harder.
Let's go.
Callie straightened, stretched, crawled out from underneath the bed, and rubbed her eyes.
Why?
Because it's morning. They're eating breakfast. Everybody's in the kitchen.
Everybody turned out to be Mimi and Evelyn Clark.